Thank you. By introducing ourselves, we are the Select Committee on Labor and Public Enterprises. And I'm Christina Temba. I'm the chairperson of this committee, and I represent Mpumalanga in the National Council of Provinces. Members will introduce themselves. Thereafter, Transnet will introduce the group CEO, Datemulise. After the members have introduced themselves, then you will introduce yourself. I'll start with Baba Sibande.
My name is Pat Sibande. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, I'm Herman Groenewald, member of the committee and representing the Northwest Province.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Rola Lenzana, from the province of the Eastern Cape, a member of this committee.
Good morning. My name is O'Neill De Beer. I'm from the Western Cape. I'm a member of this committee.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Loli Sugis. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Renelle Barita. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Thank you. My name is Brian Mudesa. I'm accompanied by officials from the department, as well as some of our interns who are doing the internship at the Department of Public Enterprises. So I will ask everybody to introduce themselves, starting from the chairperson of Trans.
Good morning. My name is Afika Kwanas. I'm non-executive chairman of Transnet.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Anuj Singh, the acting chief financial officer of Transnet. Good
morning, everybody. My name is Phyllis DeFito. I'm the GM in the office of the group chief executive.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Martin Cusabello. I'm the senior manager in the office.
Good morning, my name is Mboniso Sigonyela. I'm responsible for communication at Transnet.
Good morning, I'm Gokia Somujaji, economic research at DPE Intel.
Good morning, I'm Kasusu Sonare. I'm an intern in the office of the Ministry of Public Enterprise.
Morning, Pam Bini, PMG.
My name is Samuel Madiwana, parliamentary liaison officer from Department of Public Enterprises.
Transnet, and we congratulate the DPE for having interns. We always ask those questions. What are they doing? So today, and especially today. They are there. They'll come. The men will follow.
Go on.
So, it's
next time we will, I think, we will rectify that. Nobody.
So actually, you should congratulate him because he's the one invited them.
Oh, okay. I withdraw what I said earlier. Yeah, you were covering your. Yeah. Well done. Yes, well done. Honorable members, without any waste of time, as I have welcomed the Transnet on Entourage, led by the group CEO, without any waste of time, you remember that this were referred to us as the Select Committee on Public Enterprises. So we're just going to zoom into the presentation, and afterwards, after we have received the presentation, then we will interact with the presentation. Group CEO.
Thank you. I believe the presentation has been distributed.
Thank you. Let me thank you up front for sending documents early. We received them. That's what we always ask, and we appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Chair, I will ask the Chief Financial Officer to take us through the presentation.
Taking the cue from the chairperson, we will basically move through the presentation in terms of highlights and lowlights, and then we'll take the questions. This is what we actually plan to present today, basically just going to some statements and strategy updates in terms of the company. And this obviously is for the year ended 31 March 2011, which was the last time of the year, and then we'll give you a conclusion and a way forward. In terms of the financial performance, in terms of the highlights of the organization, as you can see, the organization has...
Wait a minute. The mic is off.
As we can see, the organization has actually performed quite well from a financial perspective. All of the financial indicators that one would look at from a financial perspective have performed quite well. Revenue is up, EBITDA is up 9.4%, cash generated from operations up 13.5%, which is obviously quite an important indicator for Transnet because it needs to fund the capital expenditure program. We managed to spend 21.5 billion rand in capital expenditure for that financial year, which represents a 16.6% increase over the prior year. The two financial ratios that are quite critical from a Transnet perspective that enable us to access the debt capital market, being the gearing ratio and the cash to cover ratio, also quite significantly healthy. The gearing ratio increases only marginally to 41.1%. Notwithstanding the massive capital expenditure program that we rolled out in that year, and the cash interest cover quite healthy at 3.9 times, which is significantly above the 3 times that we have in our loan covenant as default levels at this stage. The return on equity at 6.6%, pretty much a little bit about a percent lower than prior year, but in a capital intensive phase of the organization as we are in currently, we'd expect that trend to be as it is because of the massive capital expenditure program that we're actually rolling out. At the end of this year, we will have basically spent 120 billion rand in capital expenditure over the last 7 years as Transnet alone. The detailed income statement, I don't really plan to spend a lot of time in, except to say that the profit from continuing operations for the year, being at 4.2 billion rand, represents a 33% increase from the prior year, 3.2 billion rand. In terms of the revenue, as you can see, the split of revenue, over the last 5 years, revenue has increased on average to about 9%, which is pretty much around 2 times inflation over that period of time, demonstrating that there's been real growth in revenue year on year, as Transnet has demonstrated. From a Transnet perspective, the biggest contributor to revenue is Transnet Rail, which is the rail business of Transnet, followed by the National Ports Authority and Transnet Port Terminal.
operating expenses year on year has grown about 8.1% over the last 5 years. And here, the reason for this increase is particularly the cost of energy as a result of Eskom increases, as well as the fact that crude oil prices have increased over that period of time as well. In the last year, 2010 compared to 2011, you'll see that operating expenses only increased by 4.7%, which obviously is in line with inflation, notwithstanding the increase in electricity and obviously the cost of fuel. So from that perspective, the organization has done relatively well to actually contain costs to 4.7% growth in inflation, I mean growth in costs. EBITDA, as a result, as I said before, has grown 9.4% year on year to 15.7 billion. And again, you will see that over the last 5 years, EBITDA has grown at 10% per annum. Again, showing that Transnet has had the ability to actually grow at about two times inflation, showing real growth in earnings over that period of time. Biggest contribution to EBITDA, group EBITDA, again, here, as you would expect, Transnet Freight Rail, the rail business, being the biggest contributor to EBITDA at 8.1 billion, followed by TNPA at 8.9 billion. Right? Depreciation, this is the cost of actually doing the capital expenditure program. This is what we, you know, we write off as wear and tear on the assets. And again, a massive increase in depreciation year on year, 18% increase. But again, this is in line with expectations because, as I said, we spent 120 billion in capital expenditure over the last 7 years at Transnet. So this is effectively expected. Net finance cost as well is another area that we'd expect to increase, to see increases in net finance cost year on year. 18.1% increase, 2.4 billion to 2.8 billion. Again, this is expected because of the fact that we're actually borrowing money to actually fund the capital expenditure program for the year. And borrowing is currently sitting, I'll show you just now, quite significantly high. As Transnet, we're also required to pay taxes, and we've paid about 1.5 billion in taxes in the last financial year to the revenue authorities, which represents a slight, well, not slight, but a 14% decrease from the previous year, 1.7 billion. And as I've mentioned before, profit for the year has grown by 33% over the prior year. From a balance sheet perspective, as you can see, the total assets of the company is in excess of about 170 billion. Net assets of the company is at 170 billion rand, which effectively shows the strength of Transnet and the strength of Transnet's balance sheet, significantly strengthened from 4, 5, 7 years ago, given the turnaround and the quantum leap strategies that we've implemented. Property, plant, and equipment, as you can see, has grown from 113 billion in 2010 to 137 billion in the current year, primarily as a result of the 23.4 billion rand in capital expenditure, 23.2 billion in capital expenditure, as well as revaluation of assets by 8.8 billion. We've spoken about the return on total assets, so I won't dwell too much on that. As you can see, long-term borrowings, as I mentioned before, has grown to about 50.4 billion over the last year. And this again has given rise to the fact that the interest cost has actually increased as well, in line with that increase in borrowings. But primarily the increase in borrowings, as I mentioned before already, is as a result of the capital expenditure program. Gearing, as I mentioned before as well, is quite a key ratio for us as Transnet, because it allows us to access the debt capital market. Again, it's well below the 50% level that the rating agencies and the board has allowed us, as well as the shareholder has allowed us to actually go up to. So from that perspective, there is significant headroom to continue executing the capital expenditure program. Cash, they always say cash is king, and in Transnet, as you can see, we've generated a significant amount of cash. Cash generated from operations increased to 16.1 billion, reflecting a 13.5% increase over that period of time. We've utilized 23 billion of that cash to invest in the capital expenditure program, leaving us with a borrowing requirement of 12.8 billion, which we've actually successfully funded on the debt capital market, on the central transfer balance sheet, without government guarantees. Pensions with cover, as I mentioned before, quite healthy at 3.9 times. We're not going to dwell on that. And again, if you look at it from a committee perspective, you'd ask the question, well, how are we going to fund the requirement for the year ahead? And in this case, we needed 18.4 billion rand worth of cash for the last financial year. And we've raised that successfully. I can say that to the committee. And we've accessed the sources of funding as we've got on the slide. The GM
Diamond Note Program. So that's a global bond that we've issued in the international market. The DMTN is the domestic medium-term note program, which is made up of domestic bonds. We've got a commercial paper program, which again is domestic borrowings, and we've borrowed 2 billion rand from there. And then we made up the 1.9 billion rand from various loans and other asset-backed financing, which are primarily domestic loans from domestic banks. DFIs are development financial institutions, like the African Development Bank and so on and so forth. And an ECA is an Export Credit Agency. Effectively, the Export Credit Agency is a foreign government-backed agency that allows you to access funding at a cost-effective rate if you actually import equipment from that country. So those are the most cost-effective financing options for us at this point in time, and that's the reason we actually access those funding facilities. Then, if you look at the other aspect that the committee had requested us to actually touch on was the external audit report. Transnet, as it stands in the 2011 financial statements, received an unqualified audit opinion from the auditors, effectively saying that the financial statements fairly present the state of the affairs of the organization in terms of international auditing standards and international accounting standards. From the aspect of the PFMA, however, there were certain concerns that the auditors had raised, which we'll deal with on the next slide. In terms of the performance information, which is the KPIs and the shareholder performance indicators that we signed with the shareholder ministry, the auditors have signed off on systems and processes that we've got in place to measure and track those KPIs are robust and actually give you accurate information. The Auditor General had requested some specific procedures to be performed on procurement contracts. The external auditors in their work performed 104 or reviewed 104 contracts that Transnet had entered into to the value of about 22 billion rand. And other than for the PFMA issues that we'll mention in the next slide, they had found no issues with those 22 billion rand worth of procurement contracts. The Auditor General as well had requested that the auditors of Transnet perform certain key control checklists in order to make sure that the controls on those key control checklists were actually operating as required by the Auditor General. And to the extent that they tested 111 controls, all of those controls were assessed and tested to be effective over that period of time. If we then look at the work of internal audit, again, very satisfactory result from an internal audit perspective. If you look at the financial processes, all of them have actually been rated as satisfactory. The operational environment has been rated as requires improvement, but significantly, the fact that none of, whether the financial operations has actually been rated as unsatisfactory, whether you look at people, processes, or systems. In terms of the PFMA irregular expenditure, I think, again, we've mentioned that we've reported about 7.2 billion rand due to non-compliance with transfer procurement processes and practices. And I think we'd like to stress that in all cases where we reported the 7.2 billion rand worth of irregular expenditure, value was obtained for these contracts. The fact that we report them as irregular expenditure, and for not one moment am I belittling the issue around the fact that there was non-compliance to the PFMA. The non-compliance is related to internal procurement processes of Transnet. So we had gone out and said, this is the manner in which we think you should evaluate a tender. The people that actually evaluated the tender didn't follow that exact process. So it was not a deliberate act on any person that we could determine that led to the irregular expenditure being incurred, and we'll go through the details in terms of the actual nature of each of these things. All of the non-compliances, to the extent that we could have rectified them, have been rectified. In terms of disciplinary action being taken as required by the CFMA against the individuals, to the extent that we could take disciplinary action against the individuals, that disciplinary action has been taken, other than in one instant, and we'll take you through that just now. And in terms of the issues around the PFMA as well, in the majority of the cases, the PFMA transgressions have actually happened 3, 4, 5 years ago. since then to now, there's been a significant improvement in the procurement environment within Transnet. And what we try and actually outline on this slide is that if you look at the recent tender audits that have been performed by Transnet external audit and internal audit, it actually indicates that there has been a significant improvement in that environment. However, having said that, we still as management don't think it is at a state where it should be, and we're continuously improving that environment to make sure that the level or the nature of the irregular expenditure that has been fought in the 2010-2011 annual financial statements actually do not be repeated. And we give some certain actions that we've actually taken that we've implemented as a result of these issues that we found. Procurement policies and procedures have been made user-friendly. I think the procurement procedures in Transnet are 50-page documents. So to expect that anyone would actually remember what's in the 50-page documents to actually apply it every time is a bit onerous, so we've actually simplified that. Training has been revised on procurement policies and it is rolled out. Internal audit has now been requested to monitor all procurement activity in excess of 50 million rand. So whenever we issue a tender for more than 50 million rand, internal audit is involved in that tender and they make sure that all the processes need to be followed is actually followed as a result of that. Internal disciplinary processes is undertaken as I've mentioned already. In terms of the strategy update, from a volume perspective, obviously the biggest driver in Transnet is obviously the fact that we have to move freight, and this section of the presentation actually deals with the operation sections of the business in terms of understanding what's happening in the operations. If we look at the general freight business has grown about 2% over 2010. We've moved about 73 million tons of general freight over that period of time. And again, the 2.2% has been impacted by the fact that you would recall, going back quite a bit of time now, but there has been a industrial strike action of about 19 days in the 2010 financial year that obviously impacted negatively on our ability to grow volumes. Cable theft and rolling stock related faults also contribute to that significantly. However, strategic commodities within the general freight business has actually performed well, and we'll take you through that detail in the next slide. Overall productivity and service levels deteriorated from the prior year, as you can see. Quite significant deterioration in on-time departures, on-time arrivals, and we've actually put in place significant measures that have actually turned that position around significantly in the current financial year. And when we actually release the current year's financial statements, you'll see that there has been a significant improvement in that time. So, going back. The strategic commodities within GFB. Containers on rail, which is obviously quite a significant focus area for government and Department of Public Enterprise and Transnet, has seen a 13.2% increase in containers on rail, which means we've actually won market share from road. So we've actually taken a whole lot of containers off road onto rail. And as you can see, there has been a steady increase in containers from 5 years ago, from about 500,000 containers on rail to about 628,000 containers on rail by the end of last financial year. Domestic coal has shown a 12.4% increase year on year from 17 million tons to 19 million tons. Magnetite, a 3.7% increase from 2.7 to 2.8. Export manganese, again, also a good story for 3.9 to 4.8 million tons exported through the port of Durban currently. Export coal, a marginal increase in export coal, 6.8 million tons, 61.8 million tons 2.2 million tons, only a 0.6% increase. But again, you would recall here again the industrial action actually would have impacted the ability to grow volumes. And as well, in the last financial year, we had an unprecedented number of derailments that actually occurred on the iron ore line as well as the coal line, which obviously impacted our ability to move volumes on that line. Overall productivity and service levels deteriorated compared to the prior year, mainly because of the impact of the industrial strike, as well as the infrastructure and rail-related problems. And obviously operational issues such as true shaping and hook-up failures and cable theft and other safety cancellations. Now, on the operational efficiency side, what Transnet is striving towards is actually develop something called a schedule railway. So you basically have a railway that actually departs on time and arrives on time. So we will basically go towards having a train at the customer's siding to actually move with or without freight. So that's basically the concept we're actually trying to move towards. Export iron ore Export iron ore, also marginal growth from 44.7 million tons to 46.2 million tons. But obviously over the last 5 years, you see that there's been phenomenal growth in iron ore sector from 30 million tons to about 47 million tons over that period of time. But again, as a result of the industrial strike, you would find that there would have been an impact on the iron ore line as well. Ship loading rates, marginally improvements over the prior year, and again, you will find that here, compared to 5 years ago, there have been significant improvements in the iron ore loading rates as well. Maritime containers, a significant increase in maritime containers from 3.6 million 20-foot equivalent units to 4.1 million 20-foot equivalent units. And again, as a result of the transshipment increases in the port of Ruka, as well as the soccer FIFA World Cup, impacted positively on our ability to actually move additional containers. Operational efficiencies in the port remain a focus area for the company. Pier 1 DCT, as you can see, quite a significant increase compared to the prior year, a 23% increase to 26 GCH in the current year. Pier 2 remains a concern, as you can see. The target was 26, and we've actually reached 23. So there has been a deterioration there. However, in terms of the plan to actually address that, we have identified the root cause of that underperformance, and it relates to the age of the assets. And we have put a plan in place to actually accelerate the acquisition of certain new assets for Pier 2 that should reverse that situation, as well as certain other configuration issues in terms of the Pier itself that we currently address. Petroleum products, again, just a slight increase in petroleum products, 17 billion liters, compared to 18 in the current year, a 1.5% improvement. But again, here, this is in line with expectations as petroleum product and petroleum product increases actually linked to GDP, and we normally see it growing at GDP minus 1 or minus 2%, which again is in line with expectations. Capital investment, we've basically said that we've spent 21.5 billion over the last financial year, and as you can see, the biggest chunk of that went into the rail sector as well as the pipeline sector, which is the completion of the new multi-product pipeline from Johannesburg to Durban. We've spent 94% of our planned budget to spend for that financial year. And we think, as we can see at the bottom of the slide, we've spent 86 billion rand in the last 5 years on capital expenditure. This just basically goes into more detail around where we've actually spent the money, but interestingly enough, the most important graph I think for the committee to consider is again the expansion versus maintaining graph. We've spent 63% of the 21 billion rand in actually maintaining the revenue streams of the organization and actually not growing the revenue streams of the business. So we have only spent 37% of the 21 billion in actually expanding the volume activities of the organization. This slide, slide 24, basically gives you a view of the investment by asset type. And again, I think for the committee's consideration is really the locomotive acquisition program and the locomotive refurbishment program and the infrastructure replacement that we've undertaken in the last financial year. Because I think that's the biggest impact that the capital expenditure program will have on the rail business, because we're actually revitalizing the blood and heart of the rail business, which is actually locomotive wagons and obviously the infrastructure that it runs on. Basically, in the next couple of slides, we go into the project that we've undertaken, what we've spent in the last couple of years, and what capacity will be created over that period of time. And we deal with the iron ore line, we deal with the multi-product pipeline, we deal with the port, and as well as the coal expansion in Richards Bay, which gives you a good view around the main areas and the main significant areas of the business and how we create the capacity. The next couple of slides basically go into more detail, and I don't plan to actually spend much time on those slides because I think they need to be self-explanatory. The human capital element of the organization, skills development, 1,412 apprentices and 427 engineers in the company. We've significantly increased engineering skills and technicians in terms of internship programs across the company. And again, all of these initiatives were in line and as a result of the new growth path initiatives that have been adopted by government as well as driven by the Department of Public Enterprises. Employment equity, as you can see, the black-white split as well as the female-male split, again, in these areas, we've done a significant amount of work and we still view this as an area where we can actually significantly improve that. And obviously the targets going forward as a result of Transnet being able to enhance its activities in this area will be reflected in the next financial set of financial statements. Strategic enablers, BEE spend, also a significant focus area of the business, being a state-owned company, and going forward you'll see a lot more of the areas of focus on this area here. Some of the success stories in the supply development program, as you can see, we've procured 100 General Electric locomotives, where we've achieved 52% localization, the 32 15E locomotives, 40% localization, procurement of electromotive diesel locomotive spare parts and components, 34% localization, and GE locomotive spare parts as well, 12% localization. And we've signed a significant amount of transactions post this set of financial statements where we've actually seen that these localization percentages have actually increased with these very same manufacturers. So I think there is a good success story. In terms of the branch lines, there have been three branch lines that have been identified for concessioning, and the board has approved that, and we await shareholder approval on that to actually proceed with that process. Disabling injury frequency rate is a measure of how safe the environment is, and as you can see, there was a deterioration compared to target and the prior year, and this was mainly as a result of the number of fatalities that we had in the organization, as well as the derailment that we've seen across the organization. And we detail the number of fatalities, perfect fatalities, and the cost of losses. As you can see, the cost of losses have increased exponentially as a result of the derailment in the organization. The regulatory environment is one of the areas that obviously is quite of concern to us as Transnet. We've got two entities that are economically regulated, the first one being Transnet Pipeline, as well as the Transnet Port Authority. And as you can see, in both of those cases, there has been significant variability in the tariff increases that have been granted by the regulators in both cases. In the Transnet Pipeline case, I think we are beginning to see the light at the end of the tunnel, and that Transnet and the regulator are basically converging on the methodology, as well as the practice of that methodology, so we'll probably see more stable tariffs coming out of the regulatory environment on the pipeline side. On the port regulator side, I think we still see some variability on that side. As you can see, we were only granted a 2.7% increase in the current year on tariffs. But again, I think there are building blocks in place that will allow us to actually make sure that the tariff certainty that we seek will be achieved by the next financial year. NDP development progress, as you can see, there's a number of trainees, artisans, chartered accountants, direct jobs and indirect jobs that we've actually created. And as you can see, this is a status update as of the end of this financial year, just to give you an impact of, give you a feel of how we've actually progressed in that area. And as you can see, the status in each of those areas is actually quite satisfactory. And these are the targets that we've agreed with the shareholder representative. And obviously, just to mention at the top of that slide, you'll see the School of Rail, School of Port, and School of Pipeline. In each of these cases, these schools are actually Transnet schools that actually we have developed to actually train individuals through these schools and then actually deploy them within the organization as well. And in most of these cases, we actually try and actually take more people than we require so that we actually train them for industry as well. Progress on the social investment, the healthcare Peripepper train, which is the flagship social investment activity that the Transnet Foundation actually undertakes. The health train is actually a train that actually traverses the rural countryside and actually provides healthcare services to the rural members. And as you can see, there's quite a few of the people that we actually reach: 45,000 patients on board, 118,000 learners, and 750 health students. In that line, this was the numbers that we've actually reached with one train. Transnet took the decision to actually build a second train, and we've actually launched the second train in the current financial year. So we've actually now got two healthcare trains that we actually operate. And then there's a whole lot of other initiatives that I would probably not spend a lot of time in thing, other than to say that we've spent about 180 million rand on social investments in key 6 portfolios and youth. In terms of the conclusion and the way forward, I think the organization, and as we've seen, has actually produced very good financial results and financial sustainability has been maintained. Productivity and efficiency in the port and pipeline operations are progressing successfully. Continued capital investment to create additional capacity. Significant focus on productivity and safety. Improvements, particularly in the rail business, is what we need to focus on and we are focusing on. Alignment to the NDP and promotion of CSDP and BBBEE continues to be a focus area. And going forward, we would seek to actually make sure that we actually meet market demand and capacity. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sim, for the informative presentation. But I know members have got a lot of questions. But before I do that, I would like also to say, as you know, that we are the National Council of Provinces, the Select Committee. We've got other members who are deployed in the Sutu for observer mission. So, small as we are, we will interact with you. Honorable Sibande, Honorable Sipier, Honorable Krunewald, Honorable Lenza.
Thank you. Chairperson, first I would like to thank them for this presentation. It's short. But nevertheless, we must have questions and clarification. Number one, which is worrying me. I don't have a qualm when you increase your budget. But if you may clarify us, how does Transnet deal with bonuses if one of their divisions is underperforming? I mean, I would put an example. The pipeline division has underperformed in the 2010-2011 financial year. Then also, which is worrying me, Mr. Gam was given 2.5 million rands incentive bonus after being suspended. There's a question. After being suspended, because that one can create this notion that people go there because they know that I do something wrong, you suspend me, you give me cheese, and then I go. If you clarify us on that one. And then, ma'am, another thing which is worrying me, maybe if they can explain us, that's right, but the issue of locomotives. You know, one of the slides, on slide 24, you were, I mean, asset types, locomotives and everything. What is worrying me, I see refurbishment, something like that. Now, I don't know from my own assets how many locomotives are affected to be redesigned and how many are owned in good conditions. Because I believe a lot of locomotives are aging, are very old. And to me, it doesn't make a sense to refurbish a thing maybe which is protect me. Yes, ma'am. Another question is that Transnet, you know, is of the view that the potential of regulators to impact the company, you know, all this thing about the terrorists and the like. My question is that, has anything been done by the regulator, in particular, e.g., NERSA, to improve their methodology in handling terrorist increases application, which may also improve Transnet capital expenditure requirements? And then the last one, you see, ma'am, no matter to me, most of the time, I stick on two things, on PFMA issues and also things from the Auditor General. You know, the Auditor General, what guides him, I assume, is the issue of structures on board. No matter your report, they've got all, I mean, you were so lucky. You could, you get it. I thought you gave, started for question, got a qualified result, yes. But my question, because the auditing firm, however, draws the attention the following aspect, the proclamation and contract expenditure. Number one, they've discovered the issue of fruitless and wasteless expenditure of 36 million on the proclamation of pneumatic ship unloader. And then number two, irregular expenditure of 8.3 billion relating to some of the issues. My question is that I know that somewhere you have reported that you have improved your internal system. But may you please elaborate how? For an example, I don't think, Mama, that it's correct to have an idea that this institution supposed to be ordered by the Auditor General to have their own risk management. Risk management must be there in terms of the guidelines in order to make sure or to alarm you about any danger which might transpire. I'll put it there to give my colleagues also to do.
Thank you, Jefferson. Thank you also for the presentation, Jefferson. Jefferson, in the documentation which I went through last night, I saw that Transnet has improved in terms of the profits, even under the bad experience which they have of the strike. So it seems to me that Transnet, when there's a strike, there is some benefit of improvement financial on the revenue. So we hope that in the absence of the strike, we'll also see the maintenance of the revenue which is generated. And I think we need to congratulate under the extremely difficult situation of strikes. But the question, Jefferson, is that on Transnet performance, Transnet signed an agreement with its stakeholders regarding the entity target and with all the shareholders. And in all the divisions, some of the targets was not met, except for port terminal and for national port authority, which did fairly good in terms of the target set. If you can start with freight rail, the target there was on the coal and iron and ore export. The second target which are not met, which I think is the general problem to all divisions, is the target of safety. Especially on port terminals, where you got figures of 1,436, which is actually in contrast of your own target of zero fatalities in the different divisions. I think it's also a concern for the chairperson of the board, because he raised it at the stage that there is some challenges in Transnet. Jefferson, I also saw that the one for me in rail engineering is the fact that they can't meet a broad-based black economic empowerment. with triple BEE. With the outcry outside where small companies wanted to, we can't even have access to Transnet in terms of opportunities which is there. I think one of the issues which are constantly raised is accessibility, access to Transnet opportunities. Chairperson, my constituency is Saldanha, and I want to congratulate the effort which Transnet has made in Saldanha by trying the local community, local business people, get them up for the infrastructure program, which are out rolling. But I want to understand, does it happen wherever in the other terminals as well, where opportunities arise? Like we did our oversight in other provinces, and the same issues arise, that access to information to Transnet is a challenge. So I'm saying that I hope that the pattern which I started in Saldanha would be outrolled in all the ports. And just send me quickly in Kuha, in Mocha, where people also raise the same similar issues when we visit the area, is that access to this information or the opportunities. The other fundamental issue person which I in Transnet is the whole of the transformation program in Transnet. People with disability, featureless, women in your top management position, featureless, also in middle management and lower down. So we want to have a sense if there is a program which outroll your transformation. We are glad to hear the issue of skills development in Transnet, which might, if the skills are not being found, how does you create opportunity within the organization that empowered the employment force of Transnet? Chairperson, you must just be patient with me, because in my own research, I didn't follow the pattern which Transnet were presenting today. Let me go to the auditor's general report. The CEO, or the CEO, highlighted the issues which were highlighted by the AG, but I couldn't hear him say anything about the contract for the supply of the C2 rubber tired crane, the RTG cranes, which was also an issue for the AG. The other one, which is for me a concern, is a contract for accommodation of the staff, which were also highlighted by the AG. And I didn't hear anything said in that relation. I just wanted to check, Chairperson, in this thing of skills development, Transnet was part of a joint priority skills with JIPSA. Is Transnet still on that, and what did you benefit from that JIPSA program? And if there is any good practices out of that, and how can we take that good practices to other SOCs, because Transnet is in a better position because it got either zero finances from the state, but there is those SOEs which are really just part of our baggage, either to the cemetery or to the ICU in terms of their financial positions. It's always this bailout. So we want to learn from the best practices of Transnet in relation of how they deal with the profits, which shows profit last year and the year before. Thank you very much, Esther.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes, I've got a couple of questions. In the first place, I want to know, how do you handle your asset register, because in a lot of these SOCs we've got problems regarding the asset register. How do you control it? What measures do you have in place? And I want to know how many of Transnet's equipment is in our neighbor countries. I know there's a lot of locomotives in the neighbor countries who is doing some work there for the countries. And what benefit did we get out of it at the end of the day from the neighbor countries? You talk about the 22 billion rand value you have. I want to know, how do you spend this 20 billion rand in contracts? What is the main contract? If you can mention a couple of the main contracts you have, where you spend this 22 billion rand in. Regarding the containers, it is for me it's very positive to see that there's a shift from the road to the rail, but at this stage I don't think it is enough, because if we are looking into our main road from Cape Town to Johannesburg, there's thousands of trucks still on the road, and what are you going to do to get more of these containers on the road on the rail at this stage? And what is the main problem you have at this stage regarding the containers to get it from the road to the rail? I also want to know, you spend a lot of money into the pipelines, and there's new pipelines being built. How many pipelines are on your control at this stage? And where are all these pipelines? There was a lot of discussions in the past regarding the corridors, and I want to know how far are we with these corridors, especially the one between Durban and Johannesburg. I do not know of other corridors. What is the development at this stage into these corridors, and where are all these corridors and your planning around the corridors in South Africa? What about our rural areas? What is your investigation and development into our rural areas? That is the way we have a lot of problems. If we are looking into the roads, there are no roads anymore. The contractors are suffering to get their trucks on the roads, to get the economy flowing in our rural areas. And what contribution are you made into our rural areas at this stage? And with that, job creation, especially in our rural areas. Kuga, my colleague mentioned Kuga. We have an oversight visit at Kuga in Port Elizabeth. What are your future plans with this port? And what benefit are the Eastern Cape are going to get out of Kuga at the end of the day? Yeah, thank you.
I like that the honorable member knows how best to represent the interests of the Eastern Cape. Thanks, Chairman. Maybe Chairperson, a rider on Honorable Honorable's question on asset management. I will not take the first part that he has covered. I heard it, but now let me move a little further on your asset management. Do you have relations with municipalities? I'm asking this question, Chair, around Transnet municipality relations in respect of, you would remember, Chair, there are those old Spornet assets which are there
be a gray area into who then take decisions about what is it that should happen, because those assets haven't yet been handed over to municipalities for local economic development, for instance, and you do not see also Transnet getting in. Is Transnet having a database of such? Can Transnet tell me what's happening in Kumbu, in the Eastern Cape, Mount Frey, Mount Elif? Do you know what is it that is there? Chair, there is this question of the capital expenditure project, which I am happy in terms of when you are listening, in terms of the development going forward. But my question would be, do you have some kind of a balance in terms of percentages? Can you tell us in percentage form, maybe, how much is being outsourced in terms of this capital expenditure project and the impact thereof of that outsourcing in terms of your skills transfer at Transnet? There's been concern around Transnet's shareholder compact and the risk control environment. If one could be updated as to how has this been done to eradicate some of these concerns, what is it that Transnet is currently doing? I looked with interest on two slides, though the other one has been addressed in one way or the other, but this other one, slide 13. Tell me your slide 13. I listened very carefully when the presentation was made. Emphasis. Emphasis, Chair, if you listened to the acting CEO, was on the financial part of things. Where is this? Man, I wish this thing is sacred, Chair. I am at 14 now. I'm struggling. Yeah, there it is. If you look at the internal audit schedule there, your governance and the people, the method and practices. The assessment that I'm saying the acting CEO, if you listen, was more interested on the financial part of things, which in all respects is satisfactory. And when you look at the operational part, it requires improvement. Now, if it could be explained why do we still need further improvement in this area? Any medicine to remedy the situation in place? Chair, I am not raising this one for the first time when I meet ESCO, and I haven't been getting an answer which I can take into my bag and go home happy. This question of the rail gap between the Eastern Cape and KZN. You have now the port of Mara and
place?
You have your East London ID there. Very soon you are going to have your own Zimbabwe catchment as an ID that also. Then you have the Durban airport. There is no link in terms of taking your cargo from road to rail. What is it that is on the table as far as that is concerned? More so that I have seen now even a cut of the rail from Devon to Cocktail. It's now cut, it's closed. But theory, when we're here in Cape Town, you are talking moving from road to rail. But when we're back at home, and fortunately for us, CEO, we are home every weekend. We are not theorizing this issue. Okay, let me stop there for now. I will come back because slide 30, Honorable Tibir touched a little on the safety part of things, but one would be interested, Chair. This fatality, what are these fatalities? Who has taken responsibility? I can see down there, Chair, there is cost. It's a pity that now I have not done that slide there. You would notice that there is cost there in your last row, but that cost has got nothing to do with fatality. Then one would understand that once you talk fatality, be it in the form of a fatality which results into disability or to death, but then there would be cost then involved. Do you have something which says these are the costs then incurred as a result of that? Thanks, Chair.
Do you want to do your last one?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. I won't dwell much because the presentation is thick, but stick on this one. You see, there is one thing which is worrying me. If you recall very well, 2010, all of us as committee, select committee, we went to Japan, where we have learned something. We interacted and we used one of their trains. Very beautiful, very comfortable. Then also what we learned, the way they monitor the performance of those trains, and in particular, my concern is about cable theft. The issue of cable theft in South Africa has risen, increased from 41% to 51%. I don't want to undermine whatever you have, but what is Transnet doing in that regard in order to make sure that they protect the issue or they reduce the number of increasing of cable theft? Because one of the major challenges which we have learned in Japan, it was public awareness. That was one. Very clean, very advanced. And then also their system. Cameras all over, all way, everywhere to monitor their systems. Thank you very much.
Okay. Sir, thank you. I forgot one technical thing. You know, we were in Bekwen. In Bekwene, there is the issue between Transnet and the community of the issue of the rail. The community wanted a wall or fence to be there because there was seen two or three fatalities where children were killed by the train. And that thing is dragging. it was one of the issues which was raised for our attention for Transnet. And the other one, chairperson, is that your pipeline division has had a decrease in terms of its revenue the last year. Would like to know what was the reasons for it. And the minister, I think my colleague Khunaval touched on it, has announced that they want to engage the local government authorities on the issue of your pipeline, which went through the communities, so that the council can see how the communities can also benefit out of the revenue which is raised from those rails we passed. And the emphasis was that the rural areas are also going to benefit. It's not going to be only a thing of a matter. The metro areas are only benefiting except the rural areas. And how far is that process? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you,
Honourable
Member. Page 16. So this slide is concerning the general flat business. Productivity that has declined over the last 5 years. What is particularly concerning is the on-time departure and arrivals. The delay that has gone up significantly in its, let's say, 90.26% and 82.4%. If you can explain to us why is this and what is being done about this. And then we go to page 28. I see capacity building initiative. But what I would like to know about this is how does Transnet involve communities? For example, I'll cite one example, let's say, Otaval Bongo Airport in Jumala. Because where Mabukako, what are we doing to capacitate, you know, the people around there? Ebona, Babuni, Inlanda, if they can do something that Transnet is doing in capacitating, you know, the communities around where you are, that will be appreciated. And your people with disabilities comprise of 0.8. When are you increasing this? And the female is 8.4 to 20%. And gender is in it. And tell her nothing. That's been done. If maybe we can have plans in place to say we want to see before we go out 2014. We want to see that Transnet, we want to be proud of Transnet, to say during our time, those women there, we were part of, you know, negotiating with Transnet that today the percentage are increasing. That they are never had. It's the most touching that we want to see women engineers, we want to see technicians, women technicians. And on the question that Honorable Lenzana has asked, you know, there are buildings in provinces that are vandalized. If you go to Mjumala, remind me, Honorable Simande, I think it's Matekaka. You know, I think these buildings are actually inviting time. Because if they are like that without any, I think the criminals have a place to hide. So what is Transnet doing about those buildings? Thank you. You can
I think the first question was about how do we deal with bonuses when one division has not performed. The way that the bonus system works is that it's triggered by a number of key performance indicators which are weighed, and then from being weighed, there are scored on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 to 4. And generally, for a score of less than 2.4 overall, of less than 2.5, there are no bonuses that are getting paid. At 3 is considered on target, and between 3 and 4 is above, better than target. And so what we do when we do performance appraisals is that for every employee and for every division, we then look at their KPIs which had been agreed to at the beginning of the year, and then we score them. And so sometimes it would look as if a division has not performed well with respect to a particular metric. And so they get a score of 1, which is the lowest that you can get. But if you look at the overall performance, for example, financial performance, and performance relating to other things, efficiencies and so on and so forth, you find our safety, you find that in fact when you do the overall calculation, you find that the division does score, or the individual does get a bonus payment, maybe not as high as the rest of the organization, up to 2.6, up to 2.5, or less than 3, or less than 3.5, whatever, but that their bonuses are paid in line with the overall score that they obtain on a weight basis. Mm-hmm. On the question of Mr. Gama, Mr. Gama was found guilty of having signed a contract of 18 million when his authority was 10 million. It was not found that Mr. Gama had been dishonest, or that he had stolen any of the money, or that he had received any of the money as a kickback. In his entire disciplinary hearing, there was no suggestion of dishonesty. He did not deny that he had made a mistake, and that it was a mistake that he had authorized a contract of 18 million when his authority was 10 million, but pointed out that he had been advised to do so. In fact, his defense was, in Transnet generally, people do these mistakes, and these mistakes are then condoned, but the people are not expelled from the organization. They are dealt with as condonations of certain behavior. And so, when the Transnet board was appointed, they felt that, because in his case, was recommended. They felt that he had been dealt with very harshly for the misdemeanor that he had done, and that there had not been any dishonesty. And so the board recommended that he just be given a final written warning, which will be in his file, and that all his the money that arrear payment, the salary that he was not paid during the suspension, be paid, including the money for the bonuses that he would have received on the basis of his performance when he was employed, that it should be paid. And so that is why that money was paid. It appears high because
When it was paid in 1 year, but it had been suspended for 3 years. And so it was recognized in 1 year as if it was just for that year, for this year under the 2010-11. But it includes money from the previous years when he had been suspended. How many locals have been refurbished? We have refurbished during that financial year about 400 locals. This is a continuing program where some of the locals that we identify that are quite old are being refurbished. There are locals that are not fit to be refurbished, that we do not refurbish. I don't have the numbers now. But during that year, we refurbished about 400 locals. And this is an ongoing program where the E-series, the electric locomotives, are continuously being refurbished by ourselves and being made and repainted, made, and the engines as well as the mechanics are being revamped and upgraded so that the locomotives can operate as new. This saves us a lot of money in buying new locomotives when in fact we have our own engineering division that can refurbish old locomotives and put them back into use as new locomotives. I don't know if Anas wants to comment on the methodology, the Nelson methodology.
I think in response to the question around regulators.
In response to the honourable question around the regulators, in particular NASA, we have actually, NASA has improved the methodology and practice in terms of the application of the tariff regulatory regime. To the extent that you can see on the slides, there has been a narrowing of the gap between what we ask for and what NASA actually gives us. So on that side, we can actually report that there has been significant progress.
What is the fruitless and wasteful expenditure on pneumatic ship loaders? What actually happened there was that we bought some brand new ship loaders, and when they were being commissioned, when they were being installed at Port of Richards Bay, I believe, they were found to be faulty. Now, our people, because they're enthusiastic engineers and so on, they started fixing the pneumatic ship loaders, and they bought other parts, and they enthusiastically fixed the pneumatic ship loaders when they were not supposed to fix them because they're brand new, they're under warranty, they should have been returned to the suppliers. And so these officials, there was an inquiry. I think they were found guilty of, because they spent money in fixing new equipment, and they say they just wanted to get them working, and so it was found to be fruitless. I think there was a disciplinary hearing. They were given warnings that they should not repeat it again. But it was certainly not dismissed, and that is why this is reported as a fruitless expenditure on the ship loaders. And the fact that the profit has improved even during the strike. The strike was for 2 weeks. There were measures put in place during the 2 weeks to minimize losses suffered by Transnet as a result of the strike. It was just a two-week halt. You must remember that the company operated for 50 weeks of the 52 weeks, of the 52 weeks of the year. And so during the 2 weeks, we were in a position to report a good performance from the organization that showed an overall increase in profit at the end of the year. So that was just a 2 week strike. It was not like a prolonged 6 month strike. Some targets were not met, including safety targets, especially the target of zero fatalities. Chairperson, in an organization of 59,000 people, it is difficult to have zero fatalities. We have fatalities sometimes that have nothing to do with operations, but are recorded as fatalities on duty because the people were on duty. For example, 2 weeks ago, there was an accident, car accident in Mpumalanga.
employee of Transnet driving a Transnet car. Something happened on the road. The car overturned and he passed away on the scene. It is very difficult in an organization that has so many vehicles, so many people, to stop accidents like that happening. Last year, or during the year under review, we had 12 fatalities. Four of those fatalities were from car accidents. One fatality was in Middleburg. A train driver parked the train at the loading station in Middleburg to load coal, but then he passed it as a mark which he's not supposed to park, because one of the pantos, which is the thing that touches the electric wire from the train, was broken. So the train driver, because he was also very enthusiastic and he wanted to get the train going, climbed on top of the train and tried to fix the panto. The correct operating procedure is to call the technical department. Now, he knew that it would take another 2 or 3 hours, and, you know, they'll just climb on top and fix it for 5 minutes and the train will go. So he tried to do it himself, and he got shocked, and he fell from the train, top of the train, and he died in Middleburg. It's one of the fatalities that were recorded in last year. It happened around February. So in certain instances, it's just our people not following correct procedures. One person died in Pietermaritzburg. They were fixing a roof of a building. And when you are fixing a roof of a building, you're supposed to wear a strap that is hooked.
Can you wait for it? No,
this one I did not even hear that.
This one is struggling.
Okay, tell you, I'm really sorry. They are
Yeah, so I mean, he was when you're fixing or working on a certain height or at a height, you're supposed to have a belt around you and hook it on to something that if you slip and fall, you just get suspended, you don't fall on the ground. And this particular worker had not hooked on the harness, the safety harness, onto something. And then he fell through a roof in a factory and passed away. So there are instances where safety measures are not being observed by our employees. There are accidents that are just general accidents. But we are happy to report, that whereas we had 12 fatalities in 2011-12, we had fewer fatalities, much fewer fatalities, by less than 50% in 2011-12, in the year that we're going to report now. So the fatalities have come down. Our DIFR has come down from 0.92 to 0.6, and our target is 0.8, which means that we have had in the last year a significant improvement in safety, which is about a 40% improvement in safety in the last year. Triple B target not met in rail. Part of the reason we did not meet the triple B target in rail was because in calculating our BE rating for the different divisions and for rail and so on, the people that were calculating the ratings could not...
Just interrupt, but there is fresh chief letter ready. You don't have anything you can now just for your... Even you, we can stand one by one and just grab something.
Thank you.
Sorry, Chair. Apologies, I really want to comment on the issue of fatalities. The reason, for the reduction is also the contribution of the seriousness that we now take when we have the fatalities in the company. Mm-hmm. Since the GC came through, when you emphasized that they have to be reported immediately we get to know about them. Something must be done from management to the families, visiting, making sure that Transnet is visible during the period so that they can also understand that we are sympathetic and we are with them in that time of need. I think that as well contributes to the number that he has just mentioned, that we've got, we have reduced the numbers, and also within the employees, the seriousness that they attach when they are performing their functions, that they have to adhere to the procedures and the requirements of what they have to put on when they are performing their duties. I think that on its own also assists in terms of the reduction of the numbers of fatalities for this.
She's talking. I'm just reminded of a fatality in Kimberley where a coupler, you know, when the two trains must be put together and coupled. So she was doing that function between two locomotives, and one of them moved, and they crushed her. And it was a terrible sight because she was crushed in the middle. And the police came and the press came, and the press were told to go away. But somebody with a very long lens managed to get a picture of that lady there, which was not a very nice picture, from the local press in Kimberley. And they published it, and the family saw their child crushed between two trains, which was very, very terrible. So, I mean, we would also like, you know, the community to, I don't know how, you know, sensitize the press about things like this. It's not, these are human beings that have families, they're somebody's mother, somebody's daughter. When we went to visit the family, the only thing the father did not, you know, the only thing that was very painful for the father was seeing her daughter like that in the newspaper, which just increased the pain terribly. I suppose it is the freedom of the press that people are crying for.
I'm sorry, ma'am. There's something which is triggering me. I'm sorry to behave like that, you know. This thing which he is raising is very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
There's no difference about the secrecy piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we start opening our mouth, other people are making noise.
Mm-hmm.
While we're avoiding, the thing which you are mentioning is very serious. For it happened yesterday night, the family of Tatana, when they were requested to come in and watch what happened, they marched out from court because they didn't want to see those things because they feel that it brings back what happened.
Mm-hmm.
So you are correct. You need your support. I'm sorry, man. I was apologizing.
Thank you, Chair. Saldana, we made very good progress. I was not expecting somebody from Saldana to say, yeah, we are not being consulted, but now I hear it is about other places as well. Yeah, we have been to Saldana, we had a community engagement, we're looking at what we can do there. But we're also doing it in all the other places where we're operating. In Richards Bay, we've engaged the community about our capital expenditure programs in a similar way that we have done in Saldana. In Port Elizabeth, we have also engaged the local community about what we're doing at the Port of Moha. We have visited the most of the provinces, Northern Cape, with Minister Kigama, suggested this program to visit the provinces, Northern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, Eastern Cape, Free State, and Mpumalanga. I think he has been visited because, in fact, he's employed in Mpumalanga by the ANZ. We have not visited Limpopo yet, sadly, which is something that I must make sure gets corrected.
I think there has been a request from the committee to say when you do this in province, you must write to the committee and tell us, give us your progress, so that we accompany or even if we can't all of us go, but because we've got members from each province, we say to this member, can you come and join? So anytime, if you can send us your program, we will make sure that we are there with you.
Thank you, Chair. I think the parliamentary officer will start liaising with the parliamentary officer to make sure that the departmental parliamentary officer is aware of the problem so that the decisions can also go out to the members. Transformation in Transnet, people with disabilities, women in top management, this is being addressed. In fact, for this year, we have new performance targets for the operating divisions to increase women in senior positions as well as people with disabilities. Were you able to find the target? Yeah. Okay, she's going to look for it it's in our performance for this year, our performance targets. But we want to increase people with disabilities. What we found with people with disabilities is that some of them actually refuse to be categorized as people with disabilities. So they refuse to fill in the forms that will give us the statistics about the people with disabilities in the organization. Because they say that, look, I'm not disabled, I'm able to perform my duties. But people who have especially disabilities that do not impede them to do a lot of the functions, just refuse to be categorized. And we found that is something that people do. So our numbers are perhaps not correct. But we are consciously trying to increase and recruit people with disabilities. All the operating divisions will have to report this year as part of their performance measurement. They have a specific target for especially people with disabilities. We have started the program for artisan training artisans, engineers, and so on, and we are targeting women, especially, for these programs. We already have a very senior women welder at Transnet Rail Engineering that has been trained to weld according to the highest standards required for rail, and also in the other different occupations. We have women captains of autos that have been trained in Transnet. We have traffic controllers at sea in the different ports who are women who are trained in maritime. I don't know if Arnold wants to comment about the two RTC contracts that were.
Thank you, Brian. In terms of the RTG contract and the accommodation of staff, again, if you look at the root cause of the reason as to why they were categorized as irregular expenditure, in terms of the RTGs, again, if you look at the manner in which the tender was adjudicated and the process and the procedures applied by the adjudication committee in actually evaluating those tenders, there were certain omissions that they actually perpetrated that was uncovered in the review of those contracts, which effectively led to us declaring them as irregular expenditure. Again, if you look at the asset that was actually acquired, would we have acquired the asset had we incurred those breaches? Yes, we would have acquired the asset. So from that perspective, the value that Transnet received is certainly there. In terms of the accommodation, staff accommodation, here it is a little bit of a different scenario in that the employee concerned didn't apply the appropriate procurement mechanism to actually go out and source this particular supply. In this case, again, there was a need to provide staff accommodation in rural areas for locomotive staff in terms of changeover of staff. Because if you drive a locomotive to a certain point and you need to change your shift, you then have to stay there and then the combi comes pick you up the next morning to take you back to your station and another locomotive driver takes the locomotive forward. So at that point in time, there was a need to actually get this type of staff accommodation in place. What he should have done was actually go out for a procurement process in terms of issuing an RFP to the public to say, we need this accommodation in these areas, can you please apply here? What he then did was, however, there were people that were providing these services to us in these areas, And what he did was he just extended the contract for these individuals. And obviously from a procurement perspective, that is not allowed strictly in terms of the fact that he should have gone out on a procurement process to actually advertise these things. If he didn't want to do the advertisement of these procurement of these services, he needed to follow something called a confinement rule. He needed to confine those services to the current incumbent and go through an approval process that would require the approval of the GCE prior to entering into those contracts. So he didn't do that. So again, if you look at it, it was a procedural breach in terms of how he actually went to procure the services. Would Transnet still have had to have the services? Yes, it would still have had to have the services, but maybe not from the same suppliers that we currently have.
Just to illustrate this point, I mean, if a train breaks down in the middle of nowhere, what used to happen is that the train driver went to the nearest guest house, and there are no procedures that have been followed in terms of our procurement process, so this becomes irregular. And so the way to remedy this is to actually amend the policy to say that under those circumstances, you can go to a guest house and then it's not irregular. So that is what is being done now.
Yes, it is done.
This was for 2010, okay. But for this year it is done. We don't think it will be an issue. The handling of the assets register and controls in the assets register, as well as how much equipment is in neighboring countries, are left to the CFO.
If we look at the manner in which we handle our asset register, the entire asset register of Transnet is within an ERP system, which is actually called SAP. So all our asset register, all our assets are within an electronic asset register within SAP. We have quite a sophisticated process that ensures that all the billions of rand that we talk about in terms of the capital expenditure actually ends up in that asset register. So there's no manual intervention that happens by and large around from the time you actually capture something that needs to be paid on SAP to the time that actually gets allocated to the asset register. All the wear and tear allowances, all the depreciation allowances, all the acquisitions, all the disposals actually get recorded through this module in SAP. So to that extent, we do not have any assets that lie outside the asset register. All of them are inside. However, having said that, we at Transnet are currently embarking on a new process to actually improve the asset process of Transnet. One, to deal with the massive capital expenditure program going forward, but also to upgrade certain processes within Transnet that currently are not optimal for the activities that we are taking. But needless to say that the asset system is pretty much up and running, and it meets audit requirements, at least. As you can see, we haven't had a qualification on the asset thing. How many assets are in neighboring countries? We do not have any assets that are strictly deployed in neighboring countries, so we haven't taken 10 assets and effectively given it to any neighboring country to operate on their own network. We have basically assets that traverse by nature of the fact that you don't stop your locomotive and take it back as a result of the fact that it's going into Zimbabwe, for example. We do, however, have wagons that go across into neighboring countries, and by virtue of the interchange agreements that we have with these neighboring countries, there is a mechanism where those assets are actually returned to us. Having said that, though, there is a problem in the turnaround time of those wagons. So if we say the wagons need to come back within 30 days, it suddenly comes back after 60 days or 65 days. But that's an inherent issue that we deal with in all African countries. It is not the case that our assets have been stranded or hijacked or anything of that sort. We do get our assets back. In terms of the capital spend, I think the capital spend that you asked about in terms of who do we actually spend this money with, I think a big chunk of that question is answered in terms of the slide, in terms of the assets that we actually acquire. So a lot of the 22 billion actually goes into assets that we actually physically buy, like locomotives, infrastructure, rails, signaling equipment, and so on and so forth. And also a lot of the 22 billion is actually spent with our sister company, Transnet Rail Engineering, who does the bulk of the refurbishment work on locomotives and wagons for Transnet Freight Rail. So from that perspective, those are really the main areas where we spend the 22 billion.
Chair, on the capital spend,
10% of our total procurement is BBB in terms of the legislation. But then the question that gets asked is, so where are the billionaires who are receiving this money?
Mm-hmm.
The problem with the BBB legislation is that if you're a level one contributor and you only have 26% BEE, we are allowed to recognize 135% of the spend as BEE. I don't know if you understand. So if you spend, let's say, 1 million on a level one contributor, that company has got 26%, which means that 26% BEE is shareholding, which means that the actual BEE spend is 26% of 1 million. But for our statistics in terms of the legislation, if it is a level one contributor, we record that BEE is 1.35 million. It is even more than the actual capital spend for level one. And then level two is also above 100%, and level three is 100%. So even if at level three, if we spend 1 million and the company has 26% BEE, which means that the BEE benefit is 26% of the 1 million, but we recognize the entire 1 million as BEE.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why there is a disjuncture between what we report as 74% spending on BEE and the actual spending on BEE. And then, of course, there are other problems of fronting and so on and so forth. But in terms of our own statistics, we report about 74% of BEE.
Don't you think there's a need to amend the legislation?
I think they're talking about it now. I think that is what is being discussed at the moment. How many pipelines do we have? Before we go to the pipelines, let me go to the corridors. Unfortunately, this is in two parts. Can you make that a full screen, myself? That is just the eastern part of the country. Yeah, there they are, yes. That is the Maputo corridor, and then the Richco, which is the Richards Bay corridor, and then the Durban-Johannesburg corridor. And then can we go to the other slide? The third part, yeah. Yeah, and then this is the other part of the slide, which is the Fishing-Saldanha corridor, and then the Johannesburg Cape Town corridor, and then the corridor from Johannesburg to Port Elizabeth, Muha, and then to East London. Those are the main. Sorry? Page 16, 17, 18 of the financial statement. Yeah. These are the corridors. And in terms of the pipelines, can you put up the pipelines? These are the pipelines that we have in the eastern part of the country. The main pipeline is from Durban to Gauteng. But these are the main pipelines, the gas pipeline. And the new LMPP is, which one is that? The green one. The green one is the new LMPP. Contribution to the rural areas. Chair, we are going to try and revive. We have quite an extensive network of array that goes into the rural areas. Into Mpumalanga, for example, we are not talking about that line that goes to Lofe. We're going to link it into Swaziland. But in the other areas, we are increasing our GFB activity to start carrying agricultural products and to start assisting with the transportation of agricultural goods from the rural areas. We are also going out on a concerted effort to recruit from the rural areas for the training programs that we have in Transnet, the artisans, the engineers, train drivers and marine
the marine skills that we will require at our port. But we're also trying to quantify the amount of our capex that will go into activities that are based in the rural areas, so that we can quantify our interaction, our intervention in rural development in South Africa. The future plans of the Port of Doha, do you have the Port of Doha? The future plans of the Port of Doha, there has been a decision to establish a manganese terminal at the Port of Doha, which we are going to proceed to build. It is budgeted for in the new 300 billion. We are increasing or developing the Port of Doha as a transshipment hub, and we have bought cranes. We have bought cranes. We have bought cranes and equipment for the Port of Doha. We have finished paving. In fact, we've just come back from a trip to Europe where we're negotiating more transshipment traffic for the Port of Doha. What is happening in the world now, Madam Chair, is that trade between the East and the West trade between the East and the West. The bulk of the traffic from the West to the East and from the East to the West goes through the Mediterranean Sea and through the Strait of Gibraltar and then to the East, and it is transshipped in the Mediterranean Sea, so Naples, Rotterdam, and so on and so forth. But the problem that is being experienced is because of the piracy in Somalia. When the vessels get into Somali waters, they have to put a very big vessel at full speed so that the pirates cannot get onto the vessel because it is traveling very fast. But that is very costly because of the consumption of fuel that is being consumed as a result of traveling very fast. So now what is happening is that they are saying to us they would like to use the South Africa route instead of Somalia because we don't have pirates. And that is what we are capitalizing on. So we are trying to get transshipment business. So to divert traffic from the Mediterranean Sea to South Africa. You will remember that is the reason South Africa got into trouble in the first place, because of the pirates in the East, and that there was a diversion to Cape Town in the 1600s. But now the same reason is coming back with the Somali pirates. And Madam Chair, we are happy to report as well that our Navy has been appropriately resourced through the arms deal procurement to deal with this problem. The frigates that they have bought and the aircraft that they have bought are sufficient to repel the piracy around South African waters. And in fact, we've had incidents where there were attempts that were never reported in the press, where there have been attempts to capture vessels that were in South African waters that were successfully repelled by our Navy. I think the last attempt was, in fact, on Christmas Eve. And it's just that people don't know about it, but I don't know why the Navy never talks about their successes.
Mm.
But they used this new equipment that we now have, that we now have to repel a planned attack on a vessel that was in South African waters. And so our reputation is improving in South Africa because of the protection around our waters. And we are going to get more business that was destined for business. Business that was destined for the, between the West and the East.
we can now attract some of that business to come to South Africa. Of the port of Doha. This is in fact a future picture because at the moment what is operating is this area here. Where you visited, yes. Where the containers are being. So now this is an old picture. So we have finished painting. This area was not painted. No, I want the picture that was there. So this area has now been paved completely because it was paved up to there. I think when you visited, they were finishing paving this area.
Yeah.
And this area here is being dug out to make it deeper to 19 feet. It's currently at about 11 feet draft, but to attract the big vessels, we need at least 19 feet, at least 16 or 17 feet. But we are now grading it to 19 feet. We already have cranes here. I think you saw 6 cranes.
Mm.
We have ordered a further 5 cranes that will be deployed along here. So, if you go to Moha by the end of this calendar year, you'll find that all of this area here is full of containers, and that there are cranes up to the end there, and that this, we have dug this out into a key wall that is very deep, and we have developed 2 more beds. And in this area here, we're going to develop the manganese terminal. Manganese.
Mm.
So manganese at the moment is being exported out of a Port Elizabeth. We're going to move it from Port Elizabeth to Moha. Because the city doesn't like it, it's a sore site, it's very dirty and so on. So we're taking out to Moha and export the manganese out. So those are the future plans for the product.
What's happening?
The relationship with municipalities and the assets that are in the municipalities, I must confess that one of the divisions that has not been operating well is the transient properties. We are in the process of appointing a chief executive for transient properties. I think that process should be finished in a month or two. We need a total strategy on how we're going to deal with properties, especially the big core properties that are not being utilized by Transnet. We own a lot of hostels, including here in Cape Town and in Johannesburg, Netfield Hostel, Lambra Hostel here. The hostels are overcrowded, people have stopped paying rent, they're not being maintained. We own a lot of houses that are based in particular municipalities that are now empty. Some of them are being rented out
we need a total strategy on how we're going to do different properties, and I hope that we'll make significant progress during this financial year of either handing over some of the properties to the municipalities. But I know that in certain instances the municipalities have said no, because we wanted to give some of the hotels to the municipalities for one rent. But they looked at them and the capital that is required to refurbish those hotels and make them livable again and deal with the issues that are of overcrowding and what is happening in those hotels and infrastructure, which is a lot of money that municipalities were not prepared to spend. So, but we need to find, we're going to employ somebody there in that division and develop a strategy to deal with these properties in the municipalities. I think that the municipality that is suffering the most is DR, because for some reason the trains don't stop there anymore, and a lot of the warehouses and other properties that we used to have are not being used at the moment. So it's like a ghost town. It used to be a railway town, and we don't stop there anymore, and it's a big problem. But we hope to deal with the matter. The shareholder compact. Yeah, the issues around the finalizing a shareholder compact between Transnet and the ministry have been resolved. This year's compact has been signed already. I think it was signed record time for this year between the ministry and Transnet. As well as the corporate plan has been finalized for this year, submitted to the ministry on time in terms of the PSMA. We are on schedule to finalize our audit to show the shareholder the audited financial statements before we announce them on the 10th of July. We will announce our audited financial statements. The audit is almost complete, and we will have an AGM on time in June and announce the audited financial statements by the 1st of July. Internal audit findings on people practices, areas that need improvement, I think those issues have been resolved for this year. You must remember the problem is that this financial statement referred to 2010-2011. So for 11-12, which was a full financial year that has since passed, we have resolved a lot of these issues. In fact, I'm not sure you can correct me, but I think that these are no longer issues in our internal audit report for this year. The rail gap between the Eastern Cape and KZN. Part of the problem that we have in South Africa is that we as Africans are afraid of the sea. The sea. We don't go there, we don't swim, we're not interested in the sea. But if you think about it, we actually don't need rail between KZN and Eastern Cape. We need vessels to transport people and to transport goods, because rail is expensive. But if you buy a vessel and you put everything that needs to go from East London to Devon on a vessel and it sails along our coast with the protection of the Navy, we don't need any other infrastructure. But we find that, you know, two-thirds of what is considered South African territory is actually the sea. The land is only one-third. So we only focus on one-third. We never talk about how we should use the sea for economic growth, for increased activity. In fact, we don't even swim, as I was saying. I think in a country that has as long a coastline as we have, because we probably have the longest coastline on the entire continent. But I think that, I mean, with a country that has so much water surrounding it, and water that has so much potential that is between the east and the west,
You have to go through Africa to go from east to west. Two oceans, the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean. We should be making swimming compulsory so that children can develop careers at sea. The Europeans don't have all the mineral wealth that we have, but they have made a living from the sea. They have got into the sea and they went to conquer other nations by going by sea and discovering things on the at sea. But I actually think that we should we should utilize the sea more. So the trade and the transportation of goods and people from the western coast to the eastern coast and back right at the coast, I think we should increasingly be talking about passenger vessels that are taking people from East London to Port Elizabeth, from Port Elizabeth to Niasna by boat, from Niasna to Cape Town and to Mossel Bay. We have ports there. South Africa has a fairly advanced economy. The DRC uses the water much better than we do, and they use vessels. I mean, I don't know if you see along the Congo River how much transportation is only by boat, and we don't do it in the southern tip of Africa. And I think it is a disservice to the whole continent because we should be giving access to the rest of the world through the use of the sea. So the rail between East London or Kokstad and Devon. I think even Port Shepstone to Devon, people want rail, passenger rail from Port Shepstone to Devon. I don't see why you can't go by sea. It doesn't. It just all it costs is to buy a vessel. That is a passenger vessel that leaves two or three times a day, and you carry more people. You take people out of the taxis. Okay, that's going to be a taxi war. But then. Yeah, but then you'll kill more people, you can have very comfortable vessels and so on and so forth. You know, I suspect that the way that we are so scared of the sea, if we could have our own way, we would build a bridge to go to Robben Island, to go and see Robben Island. Even the Robben Island boat, we use it reluctantly, you know, in my view. And I saw it when I took my grandmother there. She didn't want to go to that boat at sea. And this is what we have. It is a resource, like all the other natural resources that we have. And I think we have to really start thinking differently about the sea as a strategic asset as South Africa. Fatalities, I've already covered fatalities. Cable theft decreased, actually, in the last financial year. From 2010-11. It looked like it was increasing in 2010-2011. But one of the things that we have done at Transnet is that I have recruited a senior major general who was in the crime intelligence to become the head of Transnet security. And his mandate is very simple. I said to him, I want to know about cable theft before it happens, not after it has happened. So his performance target is before it happens. So we've had some spectacular successes, and what we have discovered, 100% of Transnet security was hitherto outsourced. The security companies are involved in this racket of cable theft. So we find even some of the security companies that we have employed to secure our assets are involved in this syndicate. But also, the cable that is the copper that is stolen in South Africa is sold to in China, and it is transported to China by containers on our rail through our port to China, and we don't pick it up. And so one of the things that we are doing is we have a process to buy scanners for all the ports. As a truck or a train drives through into a port, we will scan every single container without stopping the truck or the train. And we will have a scanner that will tell us if the truck has got copper or if it has got radioactive material or if it's got other contraband, drugs and things like that, that we will program the scanner to pick up and report immediately. Mm-hmm. And when that happens, I think we will be able to reduce
You can steal the copper, but you won't be able to take it out of the country. So we close the gap, we close the borders for the copper and so on. Because the copper is being sold in China that gets stolen here. We will also target scrap metal dealers because the copper is being sold to scrap metal dealers who bulk it up. And when it is in sufficient quantities, they load it onto containers and it goes overseas. It is being bought in China. So we have to understand that route, we have to infiltrate it, we have to get to the bottom of the matter. But I think that in the last year we've had some successes and there has been, we're going to be reporting much lower cable theft incidents for the last financial year. The Mbekweni community, we have decided to build a wall there. Unfortunately, you know, two children were hit by a train there. Because the people cross the line, they live very close to the line. So we decided to build a wall between the community and the line. But to build that wall, and for the wall to be effective, because those people actually live on transfer property, some of the community that are closest to the line need to be moved. The municipality had identified a place for them to go, but I think there is resistance. And so the building of the wall has stopped, but it is a political process because the council, we had agreed with the council that they will negotiate with the community to move. But there is now resistance. Perhaps you can assist us there with negotiating with the council to move the people from the because the building of the wall has already started. Probably the strongest wall that we have ever built. I don't want to say in the whole of our life, but that we have ever built. It is impenetrable, unscalable wall of about 3 or 4 meters high that we're going to build, and very thick, that we're going to build between the community and the railway. You know, I have, when you travel on the blue train.
Like Berlin Wall.
Berlin Wall was, now this is like the Wall of China. Berlin was thin. But you know, when the blue train passes there, like, and it is actually an eyesore for tourists because you come through the northern part of the Western Cape from Kimberley by train, these carriages, faster service, and then when you pass at Mbekweni, it is actually very embarrassing. It is something that need to do also for the decline in revenue in pipelines was largely because of industry issues and not Transnet, because we only put liquid, which is petroleum liquid, into the pipeline that we are given by industry. We don't have liquid of our own. So for some reason, if they do not, there is a crisis, shortages, and so on, we get less liquid than we project we will get. And there is very little that the pipeline business can do. But we have completed the pipeline. It is ready, commissioned for the industry to put liquid into. It functions very well. We opened it now in January. But even this year, we've been having major petroleum industry problems. That have resulted in us transporting less liquid than we had planned to on the pipeline. TFB over the last year has actually improved dramatically. In 2010, I agree, 2010-2011 it was on decline, but I think that in the last year it has improved as well. I'll share some figures. It has, but it has improved quite significantly. We have had to give you an idea, we've had a 7.5% increase on containers on rail in the last year, for the first time in the history of Transnet, we transported more than 200 million tons of
That has never happened. We broke a new record or with goods that have, we have transported on rail. We suspect that we have increased our market share between road and rail quite significantly in the last year. So while things were not looking good on rail in 2010, in the last year they had improved. Over the next 7 years, 200 of 300 billion that we're spending on capex is going into rail, and the bulk of that, I think about 120 billion goes into general freight business, and the rest goes into coal and iron ore. And so we will increase our GFB and GFB containers on rail quite significantly over the next 7 years, which is budgeted for in terms of maintenance in expenditure as well as new capital expenditure. To give you an idea, the North Air link to Swaziland is going to remove all the GFB on the MLO to Richards Bay coal line. That coal line, that line will just become a coal line. And all the GFB business will have its own dedicated line that goes through Swaziland. And that should increase also the amount of GFB that is carried from the Gauteng area to Richards Bay and Devon by more than double over the next 7 years. Just on that line, on that side of the business. Okay, on the issue of capacity building and how Transnet involves communities, I think what we need to do increasingly, we have not communicated our programs, training programs, very effectively. Over the next 7 years, in terms of the new market demand strategy, 7 billion of the 300 billion will go into training. We will have 2,000 artisans at Transnet at all times during the 7 years. So as the others graduate, we replace them, and we have 2,000 artisans in training. But what we haven't advertised effectively, and maybe we should do this through the help of Parliament as well and the committees, is to advertise these programs, the intakes, as well through the different political constituency offices, through Parliament and so on. And I think we should liaise with the parliamentary officer to ensure that we prepare the communication and the posters that can be distributed at the different localities through the parliamentary, because Parliament covers the whole country, and if you want anything to be communicated quickly, you can do it through the structures of the constituency offices.
I was going to say that it's the officer.
Yeah. So the last two questions were people with disabilities as well as the vacant transport buildings, and I think we covered them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before you leave, Honorable Sibande, I think we have considered the report. And then we thank Transnet for actually presenting and responding adequately to the questions that members asked. And we believe that we will work together in future. Now I will read the report. I think members will are not satisfied. That the report of the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprise on the report and financial statement of Transnet Limited and the group for 2010-2011, including the report of the independent auditors of the financial statements and performance information for 2010-2011, dated 16th May 2012. Having considered the Select Committee on Labour and Public Enterprises, having
considered the reported financial statement of Transnet, including the report of the independent auditors of the financial statement and performance information for 2010-2011, referred to it, reports that it has concluded its deliberation thereon. Any mover?
Chairperson, I move.
Honorable Mlenzana, seconded by Honorable Runevald. Let me thank Transnet and say we're looking forward to having an oversight to Transnet so that all that you are telling us, we see for ourselves. But we will inform you in due course. I declare the meeting adjourned. Transnet can now live in peace.
No,
we are
part. Yes. You have definitely. But the questions that the members have asked, if there are questions that maybe come, we will communicate through the parliamentary officer. Because we represent provinces, like I say, we meet this thing. That's the matter. I saw your smile.
The way we are
yeah.
But there is still, you know, we don't want to
say that. Put it in the